Hello, everyone. Welcome to our weekly Course in Miracles study group. This is Corinne, and as always, I feel so grateful that we are all joining together to strengthen these loving ideas in our shared mind. Let's begin, as we usually do, with coming into a brief period of meditation, of joining. And let's begin this period with taking three deep breaths. So as you breathe in, breathing in love and light and truth and our willingness, and breathing out anything that we've been carrying, any concern, any frustration, whatever it is, and just doing this three times, imagining yourself breathing in the truth, being willing to take it all in, and as we release that breath, releasing all the ego stuff, and doing it a third time if you haven't already, and releasing that breath, bringing our attention from without to within. And almost like a pebble, if you've ever dropped a pebble into a clear lake, so you can see that pebble as it kind of shimmies back and forth as it comes to the bottom of the lake. I imagine this turning of attention from without to within in a similar way, where it's like my attention sort of, it might waver, it might shimmy a little bit, but it settles. It turns to this quiet, still space within our mind that we all share. It's in this space that we find our rest, our refuge, our joy, our purpose, and our happiness. No matter what may be bubbling on the surface of the mind or on the surface level of the world, we can be certain that our perspective is like seeing through a pinhole. There is something much, much greater at play. And that something that is greater at play is love. It's awareness of truth that never changes, and it's always here for us to open to. So in this quiet, still space, in this rest, taking a nice, mindful, deep breath in and out. In this holy instant, we give to you. Be you in charge, for we would follow you, certain that your direction gives us peace. If we need a word, a thought, or a tranquil, open mind, these are the gifts that Holy Spirit gives. And with such joy, with gladness, we place the Holy Spirit in charge by our request, knowing that we cannot fail, because the truth already is. It already is. And so with that love in your heart and that light in your mind, coming together to our perception of right here, right now. Thank you, everybody, for joining me tonight. If you have the purple book, the complete and annotated edition, please go to page 913, paragraph number 11. If you have the Foundation for Inner Peace edition, the blue book, please go to Chapter 31, Part 5, paragraph number 11. And if you have a Sparkle Edition, go to page 716. It's the very first word at the very top of the page. And in the original edition by Course in Miracles Society, it's usually the black book with pearls on it. It is chapter 31, part 5, paragraph 53. So tonight I anticipate that we will be finishing out this section. This is our third week actually in this section, and we've been reading about the concept of the self and how the concept of the self is made by us. We make a concept, an ego, for all of our brothers, that we lay that concept on our brothers so we no longer see them as they truly are. And this section is also talking about the face of innocence, this face that is like the good Corinne, as my mom would always say, the good Susan, her name's Susan. So this good, innocent face that we put out there into the world is the one that never makes the first attack. It's loving, it forgives, but all these little assaults again and again and again, and it'll lash out, it'll turn into the victimizer, because it's a concept and it's not who we really are. So the section that we read, well, the paragraphs that we read last week talked about how concepts are learned, they are not natural, concepts maintain the world. And the world, the whole world, is geared toward the aim of teaching us this concept of ourselves and reinforcing this self-concept. So this small s self-concept is reinforced all the time by things that seem good, things that seem bad, all sorts of things in the world on the ego level. The purpose, again, there is to keep us identified with this false self-concept. Thank goodness we have a way out, that is through the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit's job is to retranslate everything. The Holy Spirit's plans are arranged in easy steps. There's gentleness about it. That's what we read toward the end, I think toward the latter part of last week. So we sort of wrapped up last week with the Course talking about how your brother didn't make your concept of yourself. Your brother hasn't done anything to you. We've made this up. So that's kind of where we left off. So with that, I shall begin. Again, if you're just tuning in, we're at the CE, page 913, paragraph 11. FIP is chapter 31, part 5, paragraph 11 also. So I'm just looking to see if I should read a couple sentences. Okay, so it's talking about, you know what, I'm going to back up and just read the paragraph that we ended with last week, and then I'll flow into paragraph 11. That you are what your brother made of you seems most unlikely. So again, I just went one paragraph beforehand just to review this. That you are what your brother made of you seems most unlikely. Even if he did, who gave the face of innocence to you? Is this your contribution? Who is then the you who made it? And who is deceived by all your goodness and attacks it so? Let us forget the concept's foolishness and merely think of this. There are two parts to what you think yourself to be. If one was generated by your brother, who was there to make the other? And from whom something be kept hidden? If the world be evil, there is still no need to hide what you are made of. Who is there to see? And what but is attacked could need defense? I'm going to read paragraph 11. Perhaps the reason why this concept must be kept in darkness is that in the light, the one who would not think it true is you. And what would happen to the world you know if all its underpinnings were removed? Your concept of the world depends on this concept of the self. And both would go if either one were ever raised to doubt. The Holy Spirit does not seek to throw you into panic. So he merely asks if just a little question might be raised. So this concept kept in darkness, this idea that there are two parts of what we've thought ourselves to be, and I'll review what those two parts are when we get to a couple paragraphs from now, because there's a great footnote. Actually, you know what? I'll just highlight the footnote right now. The two views are, number one, that either you are the damaged victim of what your brother made of you, or that you're the victimizer. So these are the two self-concept claims. Either you are the victim or the victimizer. Both of them are false, and if we could see just what was at play, we would drop this game instantly if we could see it clearly. But we don't see it clearly, and that's why it keeps seemingly being in place. And of course, with seeing it clearly, when I say that, I mean looking at it with Holy Spirit. There's no clarity apart from that. I find it a freeing sentence, the second sentence in the paragraph. What would happen to the world, you know, if all its underpinnings were removed? What would happen to the world, you know, if all its underpinnings were removed? I think of this as just like, again, these hidden underpinnings, these hidden wishes, these hidden agreements that we've made in a multitude of different ways that really only have, you know, one mistake to them, and that is thinking that we are these, you know, false senses of self. All these underpinnings serve to keep the dream in place. They serve to keep it going. It says your concept of the world depends on this concept of the self, and both would go if either one were raised to doubt. And all we're asked is to raise a little question. That's it. That is our little part. I'm going to save my example, I think, for the next paragraph. But before I move on, any comments or questions? Okay, I think we're good. Let's read the next paragraph. There are alternatives about the thing that you might be. You might, for instance, be the thing you chose to have your brother be. This shifts the concept of the self from what is wholly passive and at least makes way for active choice and some acknowledgement that interaction must have entered in. There is some understanding that you chose for both of you, and what he represents has given meaning that was given it by you. It also shows some glimmering of sight into perception's law, that what you see reflects the state of the perceiver's mind. Yet who was it that did the choosing first? If you are what you chose your brother be, alternatives were there to choose between, and someone must have first decided on the one to choose and let the others go. So there's a little footnote here. It says, what you chose to have your brother be is the evil victimizer who stands condemned for turning his brother, namely you, into a grotesque, hated thing. So now you are also an evil victimizer who stands condemned for turning your brother into a grotesque, hated thing. So again, here's where we sort of flip-flop these different roles of victim and victimizer. Now, my example that I actually shared this actually for the past 2 weeks, because I repeated it, I think, at the beginning of the call last week, and it was so funny that it happened again. So in this section, again, it's talking about this face of innocence, the good Corinne who, you know, smiles and forgives, like the good, quote-unquote, ego. But beneath that is still viciousness, ready to attack and ready to blame and point the finger. So my example that I initially shared 2 weeks ago was it had to do with my husband, and he was giving a ride to a former supervisor on an ATV on the beach, a four-wheeler, whatever it's called, the quad, whatever they call it. I think they call it the quad. And she didn't have a mask on, and they stopped to talk to me, and so she's, like, talking up a storm, and in my head I'm like, oh, you're getting your, you know, droplets all over the back of my husband's neck. Well, so it was Monday of this past week, so a day after our call when we were talking about the same thing, you know, I brought up that example again, it happened again, and I could see it, you know, like, what happened was that we were invited over to my husband's colleague's house with the understanding, at least I had the understanding, that we'd be outside the whole time and, you know, doing a little barbecue outside. Long story short, they did not set anything up outside. It was all inside. It was like the first time since the quarantine I was in somebody else's house. And so, you know, all the ego thoughts are coming up, like, I don't know about this, like, we shouldn't be doing this. And whatever, we're there. Then, like, twice, I see my husband rubbing his eyes. I see him, like, putting his fingers near his mouth, like, again, oh, all the things that they say right now you're not supposed to be doing. So I got triggered. Like, my reaction was immediately, you know, afterwards when we were leaving, got in the car, I was like, what are you doing? You know, my immediate reaction was to attack and to blame. And as I'm feeling this, literally, like, as I'm sitting there, like, seeing that dynamic at play, look what you are making of me. So look at what you did. You are making me respond this way. You are making me feel this way. You are potentially giving me a germ, you know, all the finger pointing. That's what this is talking about when it talks about what your brother made of you. This, my example is like this in action. And the funny thing is that I could see it. I was like, we just read this in the study group yesterday, and here it is showing up again. You know, it's coming up again. And the funny thing, as I was processing this, my mom actually said, Rob doesn't share your fear, and that's what's pissing you off. And I was like, OMG, look at that. So there is, you know, somebody who he's being cautious, and he's been, you know, extremely, we've both been trying to follow just, you know, whatever the guidelines are, but there on the deeper level is another form of him not doing things my way and, you know, not sharing a fear that is obviously there, or I wouldn't have even thought about it. I wouldn't have even had a, you know, a little reaction. So there is my work. There is my work to see, number one, that there is fear there, and number two, to see that this dynamic is happening, that there's this urge coming up in me to say that you are wrong. Look at what you're making me, look at how you're making me react. Can you see the blame in that, the finger pointing in that? And then, so as I was in these feelings and like, you know, okay, so this is coming up. I'm not going to stuff it because that's not going to do anything. I'm talking to Holy Spirit. My husband and I have a very open relationship where we can like talk through these things, and literally, I will say, like, we just read this in the study group. Here's what is happening. Like, we'll literally, like, I'll literally name it. What my mind came to is what we're going to read at the very end of this section. And I shared it last week, and I'm just going to jump ahead again because we'll read it in a few paragraphs. It says, there's no statement that the world is more afraid to hear than this. I do not know the thing I am, and therefore do not know what I am doing, where I am, or how to look upon the world or on myself. So I started reading this and saying it over and over in my mind, and what was striking to me is that if you really slow down and absorb these things, this is like the antidote. What the passage, the little four-sentence prayer that I just read here at the end of this section is the antidote to getting out of that, because in that state of, you know, attacking because of the quote-unquote small assaults, you know, the things that my brother did to me, look what you made of me, that pattern, this section is saying, keeps the world in place. It keeps the world solid. It keeps time ticking. It keeps everything going. So the antidote is to come into this space of, I do not know the thing I am. Let's take this one little snippet at a time. I do not know the thing I am. So literally, I think I'm Corinne, right? I don't know who the heck I am. I don't know who I am. Therefore, I don't know what I'm doing. So in my behavior, in what I am, how I'm responding, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like a loose cannon or like something totally untethered, just flying off the seams. I don't know what I'm doing. And then it says, I don't know where I am. Let that sink in for a moment. I don't know where I am. I mean, look around you right now. We think we know where we are, right? We're in our room. We're in our house. We're in our town. We're on the earth. We have all these concepts about where I am. And yet this is saying, I don't know where I am. That was really powerful for me. That was like a big sort of aha opening moment. And then it concludes, the last part of this prayer is, I don't know how to look upon the world or on myself. So my perceptions, I don't even understand. I don't even, you know, I can't judge anything based on my perceptions. And then it goes on to say that the final sentence of this section, which we'll read when we get to it. I know I'm jumping ahead, but I feel like this is important for us to keep in mind now. Yet in this learning is salvation born, and what you are will tell you of itself. And it was in this reciting of the words, but in feeling the meaning of these words, this antidote prayer to this whole pattern that we're talking about, I have no logical explanation for how things resolved, but it lifted, it shifted. And will it come up again? Maybe. And if it does, you know what? I welcome it, because I don't want to keep that which is hidden, hidden any longer. I welcome whatever dark cornerstones are still lurking in my mind, you know, whatever things have not been turned over for to be exposed to healing. I want to see those things, because I want to bring those to Holy Spirit. So that is my little story to go along with the reading, and I just had to laugh because I was thinking of you all. And I was like, we just freaking read this. And here I am in it again. So based on that, anybody have any comments or questions yet?
Actually, I do.
Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Corinne. Hi. Okay, I totally get what you're saying completely. And I use this myself for different things, mm-hmm. especially if there are things that are stressing me out and I know that I can't control whatever it is that I'm trying to control.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to take it to another place, because I keep coming up with this thing in me that maybe it's like the ego wanting to hold on. I don't know what it is, but something in me keeps on saying, well, what am I supposed to do then? Am I supposed to just not care about anything that's happening? You know, like, it to me often feels like hearing people just kind of go like, oh, well, don't worry about anything, no matter if it's something small like the droplets, or, you know, I mean, that could be, it could be small or not, but even bigger things like, you know, Russia interfering in our election or something. Like, am I supposed to just not care about anything that's happening because, oh, wow, it's just all an illusion? You know, like, I'm saying
right.
that. I'm purposely saying that in a sarcastic kind of way, because I'm looking for how do I balance it.
Yes. Cheryl, I really honor and relate to your question. And some of the other sort of behind-the-scenes things that have been going on with me is that same, I have been in an interesting questioning phase with that exact question that you are bringing up. And what I've come to, because I feel like through some experiences and through some conversations that I've been having, there's been some more clarity. We wake up through our brothers. The course is not just meant to be done in our heads solo. We are meant to wake up through each other. So in response to, you know, people saying, oh, I don't care, it's the world, you know, it's all an illusion, we have to go within. And the things that there's like two ways that we have to approach this. One is seeing things as potential triggers that are capturing our attention to keep the world going. But then the repurposing of that same thing. So let's take an example of like animal abuse is a common one. Or you can fill in any blank. Whatever the issue is that you feel passionate about. The ego would use that to keep you mesmerized in the world and trying to fix it at the level of form. However, when something comes up in your awareness and you feel, you know, a charge or a trigger, we as core students now recognize that, like, wait a second, there's something here, it's coming up for healing, I'm feeling triggered, the ego would have me focus on this and try to fix it at the level of form to make the world, you know, better, like make the dream better. But everything out there we know is coming from, you know, the mind, and that all healing happens at the mind level. So the repurposing of those things that trigger us can now be used as means for Holy Spirit to help us awaken. So if it's animal abuse and there's something that happens and you feel moved to step up, you feel moved to do something, it's in that we will learn, and we are learning, that this is all still a dream. Kindness and compassion and care goes, like, who said this? Somebody, was it you, Cheryl? I'm trying to forget. I just posted in the Facebook group. I asked people what they've been doing lately for self-care, and somebody, no, I know who it was. I think his name's Kevin. I have it right here. I want to read his words because I thought it was everything. He is working at a medical center. So this is from Kevin, who posted on my thread in the Facebook group about self-care. He wrote, I am fortunate and blessed to work at a medical center in the infection prevention department. Fascinating being at an epicenter dealing with this pandemic. He wrote, loving, forgiveness, and treating each other gently goes further than we can fully comprehend. And that, to me, is it. So in whatever situation that we care about, being willing to engage in true forgiveness and treating each other with kindness and compassion and gentleness goes further than we can comprehend because we wake up through our brother. So I'm no longer seeing these issues as things that you just ignore because it's an illusion. I now am starting to feel more that what bubbles up in your mind is coming up because it's an opportunity to repurpose it all and to, you know, to come to a place of healing because we wake up through our brothers. And does that make sense?
So my understanding, like, it's okay to be in the doing if you're in the doing with love and healing and forgiveness with your brother. That the doing, because there's this whole thing of doing and being, and so it's okay to be in the world and be a part of the doing of the world if you're doing it from that level of forgiveness and love.
I believe so, because, and doing it with Holy Spirit, you know, not doing it alone.
Yeah.
That's the key. Like, when we lapse into doing it alone, what are we doing? We're just spinning our wheels and doing it with ego by default.
Judging.
So if we're doing it with Holy
Judging.
Spirit, remember that our curriculums are highly individualized. The Course says that. And that it says somewhere in the Course that God sent us, like miracle workers, God sent some of us here to be helpful, not to just focus on my, quote-unquote, my piece. So yes, like, if you feel like you're experiencing a calling, listen, you know, listen to that. If it's something that you care about, listen to it. And at the same time, remember that simultaneously, there can be that element of, like, you know, that hook to, like, stay focused on the world rather than on God, rather than on truth. So it's almost as if the two options are right there simultaneously.
You know, that makes more sense to me than anything I've heard ever about this subject. So thank you. That really hit the nail on the head for me.
Thank you. Thank you for saying that, because I'm just – what I haven't shared with you all is that I've been going through a very interesting, like – my periods of undoing used to be, like, panic and anxiety and, like, really not fun. I've been going through something that, like, I would say was a period of undoing, and it has to do with this – my passion for healing, for healing racism and for, like – bringing true equality into the Course community, into the world, and it was this interesting feeling of, like, well, wait a second, like, am I going into the battleground? Am I doing the court? Like, what, you know, what it was. I almost felt disorientation for a little bit, and it's been through, again, having some really powerful conversations that, as I may have mentioned before, will be public. Like, I'm joining with three other women, and we're going to be having conversations about A Course in Miracles and race that we're going to invite people to tune into. And it's there have been a few other things that have been happening simultaneously as well, with, like, what I think is, like, a past life memory. It's just all weird. And so this is, like, the clarity. When I said that, like, the clarity has kind of been coming, I'm starting to have words where I had, like, feelings before, but not quite the words, and so that the language, the words are starting to come up. So I appreciate your feedback, Cheryl, because it's been a little journey that's been very gentle and very, like, heart opening. It's been different than
really
any other period of undoing that I've had.
I really appreciate you giving us the words, because I have noticed over the past several weeks, I feel like I keep asking the same question over and over, and I totally get it now. Thank you so much, Corinne.
Thank you, Cheryl. Thank you so much. Yes, Sue.
Yes, this is interesting, because last several weeks, along with the Course, I have been looking at two other systems of thought. One is Paul Selig and the Guides. Are you familiar with his work? I know Nook is familiar with
that. The guy who does, like, channeling live, and
yes.
He, like, keeps repeating himself?
Yes.
Like he'll say the same sentence twice?
Well, he hears it, and then he repeats it. Yes, he...
Yeah, okay. I listened to one of those, and it was absolutely fascinating.
I know. Well, what's interesting is their take on, they are saying this is the time of Christ. And they have, he has dictated several books. The first one was I Am the Word. And then the other ones are the Book of Truth, the Book of Freedom, Alchemy. Anyway, but the idea is that it's part of this celestial speed up, whatever, but we are to be seeing things with the eyes of Christ. And what they do, you read the books, and each book has an attunement that they said they will help you with, the guides. If you, like one was, I know who you are, you say that to other, like you go out on the street corner and you see people and you say to yourself as you look through that person, I know who you are in truth. I know what you are in truth, and I know how you serve in truth. And how you serve is to radiate the love of Christ, because that touches people. Your words don't touch people, but your love, your light, and all of that. So it's very similar, but they refer to the illusions of the world as being anything based in fear is an illusion. For instance, when you see, you know, man has made war, man has made, he said, those are illusions because they are based in fear. What you need to do is raise your consciousness, which, of course, would say we're probably doing by letting go of the ego. We're going into more of a Christ consciousness. You will see things differently. And as you see them, they will change the reality, which is same as the Course. I also got into, I don't know how to say it, Ho'oponopono, however you say that. And I listened to his Ho'oponopono. You say it again. You say it right. But have you ever, and it's the same thing.
Ho'oponopono.
Ho'oponopono.
Don't worry about it. We got it. Go on.
We got it. But anyway, it's this very same thing. He is saying, Dr. Len is saying that it's the three levels of mind, the conscious, the superconscious, and the unconscious. The unconscious is everything that bothers you, everything that triggers you, everything, and you. He calls it cleaning, and you do those aspects. But he's saying what happens is that you no longer see it that way. You start seeing it the way God created it, because you are perfect. God created you perfect, so everything you see has to be perfect. So everything is resonating with each other. So if you're seeing something out there that bothers you, it's actually, okay, what is it in me? What is it in me that's bothering me about that? Because I'm seeing it as being very fearful and being very whatever. It's an illusion because it's not the truth.
Right.
Okay.
So, yes, thank you, Sue. Are you? Is that all you want to say?
Yeah, basically. Okay. But it just really, I thought, wow, they're all saying the same thing. And the thing about Dr. Len is that has been an ancient Hawaiian practice.
Right. Right.
Ancient.
For anybody who's not familiar with Ho'oponopono and Dr. E. Haleakala Hugh Len, sort
you
of
got
the,
it.
Yeah, the amazing thing about what he did was he was a psychiatrist and he healed a whole mental hospital without ever even meeting the patients through doing the I love you, I'm sorry, please forgive me, thank you cleaning process in his own mind. So, you know, this is where, like, there's definitely alignment there with Course in Miracles and very similar things to the Course with illusion being, you know, based in fear, and that, like, as you see, as you look out differently, like, with the Holy Spirit, things do change because everything out there is happening in the mind. However, the additional thing with A Course in Miracles is this interpersonal peace, this peace where you are your brother's keeper. The light was placed in your brother so you wouldn't lose it because we tried to throw it away. So that's all, like, very much in alignment with the Course, but there's also this interpersonal peace. And we're going to be, remember, our curriculums are highly individualized, and we're going to be called to take action in different ways. And the risk, I think, with this aspect of the Course's teaching and everything that you just said, Sue, about like what Paul Selig is saying and the Ho'oponopono, the risk is that becomes an excuse to bypass, like to hide our head in the sand for areas that we need to look at. And
that's
where that meeting place is where my interest is, because how do you know if you're bypassing, you know, how do you know if you're getting triggered, like, what, you know, what is in this little area? And some of the things that my eyes have been opening to, like jaw-dropping, I don't know if we, you know, I want to get back to the reading, but I'll sum it up with saying this. I just listened to a podcast today. I can tell you what it is. It is called, let me see if I can just open it really quick. It's about the legacy. It's called, it's Fresh Air, which is an NPR show. Fresh Air is the show. And the show's title is called The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity. And it is fascinating to see that which I think is very hidden in the consciousness of many spiritual white people. And by using these teachings, like everything that we just said about Ho'oponopono, Paul Selig, A Course in Miracles, this, you know, it's all coming from your mind, this focus on being very, very individual, that your relationship with God is all it's about. You know, by focusing on that, you then get to conveniently exclude, and I'm not, when I say you, I mean us, those of us in white bodies, we get to conveniently exclude any kind of issue of social justice. And this has been a pattern in the major world religions that are predominantly white. It is a fascinating podcast. I highly recommend it. Again, it's called The Legacy of White Supremacy in American Christianity, and the show is Fresh Air. So okay. I want to come back to the reading because I want to finish
okay,
this out.
Can I just say one thing? Reminds me of in the scriptures where Jesus says that you don't pass a brother who is in need and say, mm-hmm. be well. You
yes.
don't pass him by right. and just say, good health to you, my brother, and so mm-hmm. forth and so on. Mm-hmm. You do something with
mm-hmm.
that brother.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you for that, Sue.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's dive into the reading. I think we're on paragraph 13, although this step has gains. Is that where I left off? Can anybody tell me? I think that's where we are.
Yes, that's where you are.
Thank you. Although this step has gains, it does not yet approach a basic question. Something must have gone before these concepts of the self, and something must have done the learning which gave rise to them. Nor can this be explained by either view. And again, the footnote here is that the two views, either view is either one, that you're a damaged victim, that your brother made of you, or two, that you're the victimizer. And neither of these views, by the way, in this footnote says that neither of these views explains the...
Yeah.
What's that? Oh, Sue, I think you meant to be on mute. Sorry about that. Neither of these two views explains the you that came before these two concepts of the self. That was the footnote, so I'm going to continue now in the paragraph. The main advantage of the shifting to the second from the first is that you somehow entered in the choice by your decision. But this gain is paid in almost equal loss. For now you stand accused of guilt for what your brother is. And you must share his guilt because you chose it for him in the image of your own. While only he was treacherous before, now must you be condemned along with him. So before I move on, just to give a quick example to that, in the example with my husband, if I'm making him guilty, I have to share that guilt. If I'm saying you are guilty, I'm condemning both of us to bodies. I'm condemning both of us to death, really, if we want to get extreme. Next paragraph. The concept of the self has always been the great preoccupation of the world. And everyone believes that he must find the answer to the riddle of himself. Salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. It does not concern itself with the content of the mind, but with the simple statement that it thinks. And what can think has choice and can be shown that different thoughts have different consequences. And it can learn that everything it thinks reflects the deep confusion that it feels about how it was made and what it is. And vaguely, does the concept of the self appear to answer what it does not know? Because we have 11 minutes left, I'm going to just pause, say a few things, and we're just going to finish out this section. And if we have time, I'll open it up at the end for any questions or comments. So just to quickly review some of the things in this paragraph, if you think about it, the concept of the self, this first sentence, the concept of the self has always been the great preoccupation of the world. Everyone believes he must find the answer to the riddle of himself. So this is where the ego will smile approvingly at self-development and, you know, trying to, like, figure out your personality. And, you know, I'm sure many in psychology and, you know, analyzing the self, the course says elsewhere that, like, in therapy, nothing really happens. Of course, it can be helpful at the level of the form, but somebody needs to come, whether it's therapist or patient, into this recognition that there's something beyond this form. I don't want to digress into that too much. I just want to highlight, it says that salvation can be seen as nothing more than the escape from concepts. So we escape from concepts, again, not by an intellectual feat in our own mind. That's a step. I mean, that's very much a step. I feel like that's how I shed a lot of the anxiety that I used to live with. But to escape from concepts, to leave them behind for good, takes at least two. It takes us being able to join with our brother in that holy relationship, and that's where we are our brother's keeper, and we can't turn our back on our brother. I love that Sue just brought up before that example that Jesus spoke about helping your brother. Let's read paragraph number 15. Seek not yourself, your capital S self, in symbols. There can be no concept that can stand for what you are. What matters it which concept you accept while you perceive a self which interacts with evil and reacts to wicked things? Your concept of yourself will still remain quite meaningless. And you will not perceive that you can interact but with yourself. To see a guilty world is but the sign your learning has been guided by the world, and you behold it as you see yourself. We're going to come back to that sentence. That's a good one. The concept of the self embraces all you look upon, and nothing is outside of this perception. If you can be hurt by anything, you see a picture of your secret wishes, nothing more than this. And in your suffering of any kind, you see your own concealed desire to kill. At first glance, some of this sounds like it would be in contrast, in opposition to what I was speaking about before, about, you know, seeing something in the world that sort of calls you into some type of action. It says here, very clearly, to see a guilty world is but the sign your learning has been guided by the world, and you behold it as you see yourself. So this is in alignment very much with what we were talking about before, what Sue was saying about seeing with the eyes of Christ, Ho'oponopono, about cleaning our own minds and then seeing that change out in the world. That, remember, early on in paragraph 12, we read that perception's law. So when the Course says law, it's got to mean law. Perception's law is that what you see reflects the state of the perceiver's mind. So what we are seeing out there is absolutely a reflection of what is within. And so the work, the place of true healing comes from a change of mind. Now, does that mean that that's the only thing that happens? It's likely that, again, there's going to likely be some type of interaction with somebody or something in whatever situation it is that we are seeing out there that's painful. And it's through that interaction that we both experience healing, because it says somewhere in the Course that if everyone you meet and even everyone who even thinks of you shares in your perfect peace, you can be sure you've learned God's lesson and not your own. So we can ask ourselves, you know, if I think I'm seeing with the eyes of Christ, well, is everyone that I'm meeting sharing in that perfect peace? No, I can safely say, like, kind of absolutely not. So it says then you're learning your own lesson and not necessarily God's. We're perhaps taking steps toward learning God's lesson, but learning God's lesson requires our brother. So if we're called into taking some type of action in the world, we can do so with still seeing our brother's guiltlessness. It says what we just read, to see a guilty world is but the sign you are learning has been guided by the world. So we don't have to hate the world or be, you know, angry at it. We can see that whatever situation triggers us, we can bring the love of God into it. We can bring guiltlessness into it. We can bring innocence, not just the face of innocence, but true innocence into it by seeing all involved as innocent. I remember seeing a Facebook post by somebody, don't know who it was, and I believe it was somebody who was mistreating a farm animal. And rather than that person getting really, you know, mad and yelling at the person who was seemingly causing harm to the farm animal, this individual engaged that farmer in conversation and, you know, kind of like where the farmer's head was at, and was able through that conversation to perhaps touch things on a different level. So I hope this is making sense, because I feel like I'm not used to talking so much after reading. I like to give more space for people to share, but I do want to finish the rest of the section. So let me pause here. We have two paragraphs left, and really the last paragraph, I kind of read a good chunk of that already. Let's pause for a moment before I read the final two paragraphs. And does anybody want to ask or share something briefly?
Hi, Corinne, it's Nikki. I have a question.
Hi, Nikki. Sure.
Can you link us to, I'd love to read that farmer story, because I love the wording, because as the conversations were going on today, I had another party with my nieces, and I said to Holy Spirit in the morning, Holy Spirit, help me. I want to look at my niece with loving eyes, the big niece. I want to see her differently. So when I came in, it was all, I give her a hug, I love you. And then she started picking on the baby niece again. I was like, what the fuck?
Uh-huh.
Language. And I was just like, come on. And in that moment, I didn't call on the Holy Spirit, nothing. I was just like, oh, my God. So if I could, with this niece, when I do try to speak with her, she's very belligerent and very like, no, she's very stuck in the world of form. I could see that about her. So when I'm away from her, I can see that. But when I'm in the moments with her, I can't. So if I could have better wording or better ways to be when I'm with her, I would love that. So if you can link that, of course, if anybody has any ideas besides me serenading her with the Ho'oponopono, you know, at every party.
Oh, Nikki, it sounds tough. You know, I will just, unfortunately, I don't know where that post is. I don't even know when I saw it. So it's just like a story that I remember from somebody else's post. So I apologize that I can't share that. If anybody knows where that is from, by all means, pipe up, please. But, you know, Nikki, again, like when things keep repeating and keep repeating over and over and over and the situation doesn't seem to shift regardless of how much you're talking to Holy Spirit, there is perhaps some other thing to learn. And it might involve you speaking up more in some way. I can't tell you what that is or, you know, what to do or without getting into, like, lots and lots of detail. But start asking Holy Spirit, what do I need? You know, what are the words? What do I need to say? What do I need to do? Because it sounds like this has been a just consistent pattern that's happening over and over, right?
Every weekend.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like, it, you know, it could be an opportunity to learn how to set some boundaries when you're together, how to set some ground rules when you're together, how to talk about kindness, how to talk about, like, the anger that we have inside of us. You know, it sounds like there's a lot of opportunity there, perhaps. So I'm sorry I can't offer more than that at this time, but it sounds like there's some opportunities there.
Once I sit out loud and then I hear you, I'm like, okay, I see right away. It's me trying to change my niece, which I can't change her. I have to learn to accept her as she is. And then what you said exactly, which is I don't have words. I don't speak up. I get very caught when there's conflict. So now asking Holy Spirit, okay, I see what you're trying to do here. Let me meditate on this a long time until you're ready
Aww.
To show me. So thank
and,
you.
And, you know, thank you. Thank you very much for sharing. I'm trying to think of what part just flashed through my mind in the course. But remember, it's I think from last week that the Holy Spirit's lesson plans are arranged in easy steps. There might be some lack of ease at times and some distress, but there's no shattering of what was learned. So in other words, this is part of your learning. You might need, it doesn't need to be about changing your niece, but if it's hurting, if somebody else is getting hurt, the younger niece, there can be a place there for you perhaps to be a caretaker, you know, some sort of caretaker and maybe protector in that type of situation. So just throwing that out there, ask Holy Spirit for words and see what comes up.
Thank you.
Thank you. And then I heard, I want to just hear, Paula, I heard you, I think, and then we'll keep reading.
Yeah, I would just love it if you would just talk a second about this one sentence. If you can be hurt by anything, you see a picture of your secret wishes. Nothing more than this. What secret wishes? What is
our
that?
Secret wishes are to, that this is a big one. If you can be hurt by anything, you see a picture of your secret wishes. Our secret wishes are to be separate. And to be separate means we're separating ourselves from innocence, harmlessness, guiltlessness, wholeness, you know, we're stepping away from that. And so those are our secret wishes, to push away. Excuse me.
And this applies to what she was just saying about her niece.
How do you see that?
Because on some level, maybe she, I'm not just her. I mean, I've been in that, we've all been in that situation where we're just not willing to not be separate.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We just
right.
want it the way we want it.
We want it the way we want it, right. And
there's, I think there's something, too, to really be just allowing that, you know, and just observing that when it happens. Because that's the ego. That's not how we really are. We want
right.
to be loved. We want to love.
Right. And that older niece is probably, she's looking for love.
She's
in some
looking for
way,
love,
shape,
too.
Or form.
She's going to get it one way or the other. She's going to get
right,
something
right,
one way or the other.
Negative. Somehow negative.
Sometimes that's the only way they know how to get it.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. That negative attention was probably somehow reinforced or there's, I don't know. But anyway. You know, I'm not going to try to push it and barrel through these next two paragraphs because this is, I want to just give us a chance to absorb what's in here. So we'll finish out these two paragraphs and then we'll move into the next section next week. But I will just say that's kind of a kicker, right? This sentence that you just highlighted, Paula, if you can be hurt by anything, you see a picture of your secret wishes, nothing more than this. Mm-hmm. So if you can be hurt by anything, if you're being hurt, what are you in the role of? You're in the role of the victim. So somebody had to be in the role of the victimizer, and then we switch those roles, you know, in a snap. It's about stepping out of both of those roles. You're being unharmed no matter what happens. You're claiming your innocence and your wholeness no matter what has happened in your past. Establishes your brother's innocence, even if they were behaving in the role of a victimizer, you know, somebody who did something awful. Mm-hmm. This is like high level, like deep, big stuff, because if you can see, and when I say you, I'm saying all of us, if you can see an abuser as a child of God, a misguided child of God who's hiding out, you know, in the ego crap and not knowing what they're doing. Remember Jesus said, forgive them, Father, they know not what they do. And in the Course, he says, in no way does that imply that he was judging, you know, what they do. If we can see that wholeness in somebody who is in one of these roles, victim or victimizer, we are freeing both of us to be completely healed. We're freeing our own mind and our own body into complete healing, and we're freeing them as well. I just want to share two quick things. One is that your healed body establishes your brother's innocence. So if you are the picture of wholeness and of health, if that body of yours is that picture of wholeness and of health, you're showing your brother their innocence, and so you have to know your own. That's one little Course thought that's always stuck with me. That's been kind of like a wow moment for me. And then something related that I actually saw on online from my friend Maureen Muldoon. I so resonated with her post because I go for walks in the woods by myself, and she was like, I'm typically afraid to, so I've been doing it. And she said that her mantra was, I can be fearless so you can be innocent. Meaning, and my words are, I'm stepping into fearlessness when I'm walking alone in the woods so I can establish your innocence. Meaning, whoever I might pass that in a typical situation, I might get a little bit nervous if it's like a male figure, you know, coming, like if I'm in the middle of the woods and somebody's walking toward me also alone in the middle of the woods. My fearlessness establishes their innocence. And I just thought that that was such an incredibly powerful teaching that she shared. So, Paula, I kind of rambled on, but did we sort of like touch upon anything
cleared
up that sense? Okay.
Yeah, no, that sounds right. Can I just say one thing to that girl who was talking about her niece? Just
sure,
the fact that these kind of situations are happening every time she encounters her niece, and her willingness, she has a wonderful willingness to heal this is going to happen.
Yeah.
And the Holy Spirit is going to help her. Just let it be. Let it be.
Aw.
Just
Thank
accept
you,
the anger, the, you know, the whole thing. Just let it be what it is. But there's going to be a great healing in that relationship.
Okay. Thank you, Paula.
Nikki, love you, Corinne.
Oh, I love you, Paula. And Nikki, like, really take that in. Like, I really want to emphasize what Paula just said about your willingness with, you know, this being a repeat situation and bringing it up. And it you've got that abundant willingness, and that's beautiful.
Yeah.
So thank you. All right, we're over time, so we'll finish up this section next week, and we'll take it from there. I love you all. Thank you so much for being here. Big group hug.
See you next week.
See you next week. Bye, everybody.
Okay, love you.
Goodbye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
Bye, Queen. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.